The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia. This is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show presented by the Masters Law Firm and our friends at Parmar. If there's not a Parmar near you now, there will be soon. I'm Anthony Lewis in the Stone Church Studio today with Michael Sussman, Derek Bailey, and the GOAT is MIA today. Actually, he was out celebrating his wife's birthday.
Oh, good for him. Happy birthday to Mrs. Coburn.
So I think they were, what did he text about 10:30 last night and said,
they were in Washington, D.C.
We're getting ready to start partying. I'm not coming in tomorrow.
Out on assignment.
Okay, good for him. Good for him and his wife. But we are here today to talk about West Virginia's victory in Morgantown in front of 43,000 fans. We'll get to that number later. I got some issues with that. And the Mountaineers rolling the Bearcats of Cincinnati for the first time in, God, how many years has it been?
It's probably been about 12 years ago.
12 years?
12 years ago was the last year in the Big East, I believe, 2011.
It was good to see all the Bearcat fans in Morgantown. It made me feel, it felt like a Big East thing again.
There were a lot of them. They had most of the slice of pizza in the corner filled up. And they were doing a lot of cringy chanting in the concourse, but it was good to see them there. They were lively.
Hey, good for them for turning out because they're terrible. That team is terrible. Good for them for traveling. Congratulations. Yeah, great fans. That's great fans right
the
there.
People that were tailgating with us, we had about 6 Bearcat fans with us, super nice folks.
Good.
That's good. And they're season ticket holders, made the trip.
I mean, haven't they been through enough? They've got the Bengals, the Reds. I mean, it's just horrible for them. I feel horrible. It's horrible.
Somebody brought the Bengals up yesterday.
It's terrible.
Did they have Skyline chili in the tailgate?
There was chili, but it wasn't Skyline.
Okay. That's a big thing in Cincinnati, Skyline chili, yeah.
But they were excited when Coach Huggins stopped by the tailgate.
I bet they did get excited about that.
They asked him to come back and coach.
I don't know. Their coach is the kid from North. Well, he's not a kid.
They don't care. They're just like, will you come back and coach us, please?
Isn't it Wes Miller? I think that's their coach. He coached at UNC Greensboro. He went to North Carolina. I think that's who their coach is.
I don't remember. But, it was cool yesterday, before we even get into the numbers and the stats and all that stuff, was the recognition of Coach Don Nealon yesterday. That was really cool to see. The pictures were coming out Friday night. They had a huge reception for him. Excuse me, I'll throw these keys away. They had this huge reception for him. And that's why I got the podcast. You can do whatever you want. So that was cool. I think they said it was like 200 former players that showed up over the weekend.
Oh, fantastic. That's great.
Just in the pictures, these are just people I saw. I saw Adrian Morrell, Renato Turnbull, Bo Orlando. Of course, Jeff Hostetler's there. I mean,
Avon was there.
Avon was there with his wife.
Jerry Porter make it?
I didn't see any pictures of JP, but I did see Mike Fox in the concourse. Talk to him for a little bit. You know, he's a big dude.
Well, I know. None of these dudes are really small. They just look small compared to others. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But, yeah, he's a really big guy.
But what an honor. And I started thinking about it at the game. And now I can see why Avon was getting so fired up about the fact that it's like 15 years too late.
Oh, it was way too late. Everybody's in agreement with that. Way too late.
You know, they put him in the Hall of Fame, the College Football Hall of Fame in 2005, and then they wait till now. I mean, you know, God forbid, they're lucky the man's still here. I mean, just odds say you won't live to 87, and here he is doing really well at 87. But, man, that was way too late, but it was really cool.
It really was. When they lifted the banner and you saw the immortalization in the corner, it was a really powerful moment. There's not that many times where tens of thousands of people rise in appreciation for one human, and it was fans of all ages, alumni, even some of the current players were down there clapping, and it was cool.
I heard a lady behind me, maybe a row or two back, talking to her grandson. Mm. about coaching the very first game at Mountaineer Field, and she was there. There was a lot of that going on around us, you know.
And he talked about it. West Virginia was really at a bad point when he took that program over. I mean, Schembechler told him not to come.
Yeah.
Told him not to come. I mean, that's how bad WVU was.
Yeah, what's Bo now? Thank goodness. I'm glad he didn't listen.
Yeah, thank you, Bo. All right, let's get into the Mountaineers. First of all, let's talk about the rushing attack. 424 yards on the ground. Four touchdowns.
At least four.
The rushing attack was back with a banged-up C.J. Donaldson. Had some other guys step up. What'd you guys think of Jaheim White?
He was awesome. We saw something that we didn't see previously, which was power. He drug the pile a couple of times. It got him involved as a receiver, too. And the big boys did a good job paving the way, for sure. But I think we saw really what this guy can be.
This is what you expected from the offensive line all season long. This is what we've talked about over and over and over, about getting behind that offensive line and just paving people, and they finally did it. What was it, 435 yards total or something out of all of them? It was a bunch. It was well over 400. And, you know, White gets 200, which is incredible. He was incredible yesterday. He looked great. Gives you a 1-2 punch now with he and Donaldson, if we can get Donaldson healthy. So, great performance overall, and it was great to see White really step up to the plate in Donaldson's absence.
He had 10 yards per carry yesterday.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, 21 carries, 204 yards. Had a long of 47, and even was that a wheel route? See, our seats. No, we were in the front row on the 50. You can't get better seats, I guess, better seats. But my old brain likes to sit higher so I can watch things. And so I couldn't tell if that was a wheel route or if it was more of like a hit. They hit him in the flat.
It looked to me just like a kind of a broken type play, and he just kept running and no one picked him up. That's what it looked like to me on TV, but I'm not there in person. But on TV, it looked like and it was a great throw by Green, a little bit off, but I mean, overall, a great throw, great play. But I thought it was a broken play. Michael might know more because he was up above.
We got that in the locker room report for the radio show later. I don't remember the exact wording. I think he just kind of read the matchup and burned him.
Just kept running. Yeah, this is what it looked like to me.
Nice. But it was good to see him, you know, and so people – it's funny. So I hate referring to Twitter too much because there's a lot of nutty things that go on over there.
But if it's on Twitter, it's true.
There was conversation and even saying, well, what took him so long to play him? Listen, and how many times have I said it here? Basketball, football, baseball, whatever. It boils down to the trust of the coach. And, you know, sometimes you can stick a guy in there too early and they're not prepared. And it's not about can he run north, south, and east, west and make cuts. It's about
can he pick up a blocker or a blitzer.
Well, Avon's told the story before.
Yeah.
His first game as a redshirt freshman, East Carolina blitzes. He doesn't chop block the guy right. Takes out Mark Bulger's knee, marks out for 6 weeks.
If Adrian Peterson did not block, Adrian Peterson would not play. That's just the sample. That's how it is as a running back. If you do not block, you do not play. That's the way it goes.
So sometimes the guys aren't ready. But anyway, he is, as the season is progressing, he's getting better. So it's good to see. You've got a stable of running backs in the offseason. I'll be curious to see how it all shakes out. But you have a stable running back. So let's talk about Garrett Green. Again, put up the Pat White numbers.
He's the only quarterback other than Pat White to do what he did yesterday. I'm not sure if it was 250 and 150 or whatever it was. Pat White did it twice. This is the first time anybody else has done it. It's Green.
Yeah, it's 210 yards through the air, 154 on the ground.
So maybe it's 200 and 150.
Yeah, but how many times have I said it this year? He's putting up what I call these Pat White numbers. They're not like over-the-top passing yards or even like we don't really talk much about somebody running for 154 yards, but you put them together as a quarterback, and that's what the type of stuff even Denard Robinson would do.
Yeah, and then you have those days where you go off and it's unstoppable.
Yeah,
they could not tackle him on the outside. Garrett Green's juke ability, if that's a word, was on display yesterday.
He's not just a good runner. I think he's a great runner at this point. He's a very – I mean – He makes people miss. He does a lot of good things out there. I'm nitpicking a little bit, but I'm going to nitpick all the time because it's what I do.
You're being negative.
No, he's still negative. He missed Carter on a slant pattern over the middle, and I believe he overthrew and you've got to hit that pass because it's a walk-in touchdown. That's the plays that he's got to make, but let me say this, he's improved. I'm not going to say that he hasn't improved. I'm not going to kill him too much, but like that's the thing that we want to see him do is make these easy plays. He seems to make a harder play than he does an easier play. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But overall, he was very good yesterday, and he's like I said, he's turned into a great runner.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's about where are you this time of the season, end of the year? Do I have something to look forward to next year? Have you shown progression? And I believe he has. The fact that he comes back next year will probably make him one of the premier quarterbacks in the Big 12 next year. They're not going to put him at the bottom of the list. That's for damn sure.
He'll be tested early. Week one, getting a test.
Yeah, well, we'll get into all that stuff. We got lots to talk about as far as future scheduling. But I'm just saying, though, he was listed as the worst quarterback, actually, in the country.
And the thing that...
Wow. Remember? You guys remember? Or was it the Big 12? No, we were listed
West Virginia,
the worst team in the Big 12, and yeah. He was listed the lowest rated quarterback in the country.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about now. He's probably in the upper quarter of the conference.
Well, I'll tell you right now, he's better than seven that I know for sure, and they're all in the Big Ten West. He's better than every single quarterback in that side of the division. He is. It's not even close. Those guys are... That side of that conference, I mean, I'm not – and West Virginia picked 14th in the Big 12. It was laughable, too, and we all said as much.
Do you guys so one of the things that was talked about this week, and you referenced it earlier, Derek, was the offensive line of West Virginia versus the defensive line of Cincinnati. They've got some guys up front that are going to play on Sunday. And I think it was – and we'll get into it probably in the locker room report, but I know there was a lot of reference – to the matchup with Corleone and some of those guys up front. The offensive line mopped those guys. I could watch it front and center yesterday, and that was fun to watch.
It looked like it on TV. It looked like they were getting a really, really good push up front, and, I mean, the running stats back that up. So the offensive line, like, where's that been all season? That's the problem. Where's that been all season? We've waited all year for it. It didn't take 11 games. They've been hit and miss. They're like Green. They're inconsistent. You get great games, bad games. I mean, that's just what they've done. You'd like to see that be consistent.
Yeah, they had a chip on their shoulder yesterday. Neil said something at the press conference. I guess they were left off of a national watch list, and they should have been in the semifinals, according to Coach, and they kind of used that throughout the week. And to your point, you want to see them going out and trying to dominate people every single week.
Like, that's one thing that should never, like, have been faded away this year is West Virginia's running game. They should have been able to run the football on every single team that they played this year, and I felt like sometimes they just couldn't run the ball.
Don't forget, later in the show, the Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week. Write this number down, 304-305-2-TDC, 304-305-2-832. Alumni Hall, with locations in Charleston and Morgantown. Let's talk about the West Virginia defense. Those boys came to play yesterday.
They absolutely did. It was good to back it up. It was good to see complimentary football out there. The offense gave them a lead, and they just ratcheted down the hatches all game.
You know, the defense, yeah, this is where my expectations of the program, like, everybody might think they're too high because I'm negative or whatever, and that's fine. You play an inferior opponent, and this is what you're supposed to do. Yeah. You dominate both sides of the football. This is what West Virginia football should be. The BYU game, the Cincinnati game. When I think of West Virginia football, that's what I think of. You dominate the teams you're supposed to, and then every now and then you upset somebody and you have a great season. But overall, the defense, you know, yesterday I thought they did a lot of great things. I mean, the two touchdowns late, man, I don't really care. It was 42-7 in the fourth quarter. Who cares? The game was over.
Yeah.
And that was probably a lot of backups out there too.
The quarterback, Emory Jones, for Cincinnati, is he a Florida transfer?
He transferred from Florida.
He was not too impressive.
They didn't have a – I think they played three, and I wasn't impressed with any of the three.
He was an overthrow machine.
If you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one, and that's what we saw yesterday out of Cincinnati.
So, like I mentioned earlier, our seats were on the visitor side, front row on the 50.
Okay.
So who was huddling in front of us when the defense was on the field?
They're all offense.
They're quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was kind of giving it to them, Jones, a little bit.
Were they looking pretty stressed out?
So, you know what? They didn't seem like they cared.
They probably don't. Their season's over.
I mean, there wasn't a lot of talk with the coaches and even amongst the backups. So, we started yelling for the backup.
Yeah. They put him in.
And they put him in, and he scored.
Yeah.
And then we started yelling, put Jones back in. Put Jones back in. But what was odd was they didn't put the backup back in. They took him out and they put
Jones
back
in.
I couldn't believe it. The guys that were with us that were Bearcat fans were beside themselves.
Well, they scored, yeah. They scored with the other guy.
The crazy thing to me with what Cincinnati's done, and I don't know much about him. I know Louisville was absolutely thrilled to get rid of Satterfield, and Cincinnati hired him. I don't understand the process there because Louisville wanted him gone. Like, they were thrilled that Cincinnati took him. And you hear that from the Cincinnati fans that you sit with, like, saying, what are they doing?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess, you know, who knows?
Even I said, what are they doing?
Why would they? Yeah, I mean, at that point, it was, what, 35-7 or whatever. Leave the kid in. Like, yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything.
Lee Koba, 10 tackles, a sack, tackle for a loss. Defensive line played well yesterday. You know, defensively, I never felt like Cincinnati was ever in the game. It just felt like as soon as we scored twice and – you know, they just couldn't get it together. It just, from about the middle of the first quarter on, it was like, all right, let's just have a good time today, and that's what it was about.
I feel like when we get into these games late in the season and teams don't really have much to play for, they just mail it in. Yeah. Like, I feel like Cincinnati has mailed in their season. Their kids are probably ready just for the season to end. They don't care. It's probably over. Some of them are going to hit the portal. Some of them are going to work hard and come back. And, you know, but I feel like when you get late in the season and teams are 2-8 and 3-7 and stuff, they just kind of say, hey, you know what, let's just get this game over with and go home.
Speaking of getting things over with and going home, it's Thanksgiving week. I'm excited to get work over with.
This is the best week of the year. This is the best week of the year.
So go to Alumni Hall and get your stretchy pants ready.
Yeah, it's the best week of the year. There's tons of great college basketball. There's tons of great college football. There's tons of food. You only work 3 days. You can sleep. It's awesome. Best week of the year.
And this week will kind of shape the bowl picture. You got some big matchups this week with, you know, it's rivalry week that will determine who's playing in the college football playoffs. Yep. And who's going to play in the second, well, not second tier, but the New Year's Day bowls, the Big Six.
You could be looking at some serious chaos right now with some things that could break, because what if Louisville,
who's playing in the ACC championship,
if they beat Kentucky and then beat Florida State and finish 12-1, Florida State's quarterback's out.
Mm-hmm.
Washington beats Oregon loses to Oregon State but beats Washington in the championship game. Michigan or Ohio State one goes on and finishes undefeated. Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game. You've got a mess on your hands. Texas goes 12-1. You could have 12-1 Texas, 12-1 Oregon, 12-1 Washington, 12-1 Alabama, 12-1 Louisville. I mean, you could have an absolute disaster. And this isn't far-fetched. Like, it's not that far off. It could happen,
yeah, you're right.
I think the positive there is that you avoid the Ohio State-Michigan, like, both team get-in scenario like we had last year.
But then your question, though, comes, do Alabama and Georgia both deserve to get in?
I'm fine with that.
That
would not bother me.
That's where I think that we're headed. I think that if Alabama were to upset Georgia in the SEC championship game, I think Alabama and Georgia both get in. I still think Georgia's the best team in the country, by the way.
but then if Louisville wins out,
they're 12
you give
and
them
one.
The nod.
I that's the thing. I don't know. I mean,
you have to because they were going to give Florida State the nod. Yeah.
Here's a crazy question. Well, but they're not undefeated. Florida State's undefeated.
But still, you're putting a bunch of one-loss teams.
Like, who do you pick? Well, here's another scenario. And, I mean, it's unlikely. What if Iowa upsets the East champion, Michigan or Ohio State, and they're sitting there 12-1?
You know, I'm all for expansion, like the expansion of the playoffs, but just put your champions in. Just put the champions in, if you've got a scenario where in the SEC you've got two undefeated teams like Georgia and Alabama, and Georgia kicks a field goal to beat Alabama late, then maybe they're the sixth seed. But this 16 teams, all this crap, we don't need all that.
To me, if you're going to – I mean, there's no fair way to do it. But to me, if you're going to do it the way they're trying to do it, I prefer 8-10-team conferences. The conference champions go and get it over with.
Yeah.
That's how I would see it, but whatever.
Let's talk about bowls for West Virginia. So in the Big 12, they have a Sugar Bowl tie-in, which – We're not playing in that.
That could possibly be Oklahoma at 10-2.
Yeah, because Texas could end up in the college football playoff. Well, you had the playoff. You had the Sugar Bowl. So here's where West Virginia, well, I don't see us playing in the second-tier bowl. I don't see us playing in the Alamo Bowl. That's against the Pac-12. If they would have beat Houston, There, that could have been the landing spot for West Virginia.
But where, I mean, okay, let's say, let's just be hypothetical and say Texas gets to the playoff. Oklahoma ends up with a third loss, so they get knocked down out of the New Year's Six. Where would the second place team go?
The Alamo Bowl.
So that would be Oklahoma.
Well, so the second, so the if the Big 12 champion earns a spot in the college football playoffs, then the second place team will play in the Sugar.
Oh, for sure. The second place team gets the Sugar no matter what, because I thought they could take whoever they wanted.
Yeah, well, see, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the scenarios but either.
Let's get down to where West Virginia lives.
Yeah, that's fine.
Down here in the ghetto.
Was that a shot at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis? I don't want to hear it now. It's messed up, man.
I like Memphis. Let's see here. So, you know, if they had beat Houston, they would have potentially been looking at the Alamo Bowl against a Pac-12 team, which at one point looked like it could have been USC, but they're 7-5.
Well, I mean,
we might match up with them later down the list here. Let's look.
I hope we get them because Caleb Williams isn't going to play.
So here's where it might get a little real for West Virginia. West Virginia might end up in the Pop-Tarts Bowl in Orlando, which is the old Citrus Bowl, which it used to be called the Little Caesars. It's been all kinds of crap. Again, don't get me started on bowl names. It needs to just be the Citrus Bowl. But anyway, the Orlando Bowl. You play an ACC team.
That could be Clemson or North Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking
at Clemson. How do you fare against those teams?
Probably not well. Especially that North Carolina quarterback would probably have a field day on our secondary.
Yeah.
Now, that West Virginia would move the ball on them, though.
Yeah.
Now, Clemson, I don't think you'd stand much of a chance against because they could probably – because
they're getting better.
Their defense is pretty good, too.
And I think in the back of Dabo's mind, he would want revenge.
70, that 70 burger is a hard thing to forget.
Yeah, you don't think they're going to bring that up?
Yeah.
Then you got the Texas Bowl. Now, here we go. Texas Bowl versus the SEC. That's going to be the 5th rated bowl.
So you got Alabama and Georgia are going to a better bowl. So they're both going to get a good bowl. So they're out. You still have LSU. You have Tennessee. You have Missouri.
We don't want to play with.
That's 3, 4, 5. So did you say the 5th place team?
You could potentially get matched against Kentucky. You could potentially get matched. Who did A&M win yesterday?
Yeah, but they played like Abilene Christian, so I don't know where they really stand in the SEC.
They're 9-4.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're talking the fifth-place team, the fifth-place team in that scenario, in my opinion, would probably be – well, no, it would be somebody like Kentucky because the lesser bowls would start like the Citrus Bowl would pick LSU, say, and yeah, right. you're probably right. It'd be like Kentucky.
All right, so there's a potential SEC matchup against Kentucky. The Liberty Bowl, same thing, SEC. If you're not getting Kentucky, you're getting...
If you get Tennessee, you're in a major world of pain.
That'd be tough because a lot of the mistakes WVU's made over the course of the season would be exploited. Like the missed Garrett Green throws, the weaknesses in the secondary would be tough because you're neutralized in the interior.
And can you imagine Tennessee, like the way they throw the ball, like those just they would just be airing it out. It would be scary.
All right, so here's the one bowl game that I do not want to play in is that damn Guaranteed Rate Bowl. It's the old
Minnesota game.
The game plays on the East Coast at 10 o'clock at night on a Wednesday. It's the crappiest bowl ever because of the time. It's the old Insight Bowl, which, you know,
the Insight.com Bowl. West Virginia lost that to Missouri in like 98.
So what happens is these bowls, like for instance, the Fiesta Bowl has a junior bowl.
That's it. And that's the junior bowl. Yeah.
And then, you know, so that's how some of these play out. So you're going to end up playing against a Big Ten team.
And boy, if you get a Big Ten West team, you got a real good shot to win because none of those teams can score.
Another exciting game against Minnesota, 18-7.
I was gonna say that you get somebody like that, it would be a game like it would seriously be like 14-6, 15-12, something like that. It would be ugly, but
that would be a snooze fest on your Wednesday. Also,
and that's the hard part. Like, who wants to stay up and watch that crap? Like
nobody. Who wants to pay for that? That's got to be a cheap deal for Guaranteed Rate.
Yeah. I mean, there's no Guaranteed Rate involved in that. And then these are games you really don't even want to be involved with because it's the First Responders Bowl. No disrespect to the First Responders, but you're playing against the AAC. Same thing with the Armed Forces Bowl. No disrespect to the Armed Forces, but you're playing against the AAC. But,
you know, you almost wonder, though, too, with the way they're looking at this, like, because there's not going to be enough teams to make the bowls, like, to get everybody bowl eligible. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to take teams. You almost wonder if they get into a matchup thing where they think, hey, you know, let's put West Virginia in this bowl game against Virginia Tech. Let's put West Virginia in this bowl game against, I mean, Pitt's not eligible, but you see what I'm saying. Like, somebody that would draw an interest, somebody that would draw, like, maybe some eyes for TV. You wonder if they would do that in some at capacity, sell a few or if tickets. They could. Yeah, if they could.
It's, believe it or not, I think one of those two bowls is actually a New Year's Day bowl. It's not considered a Big Six, but
it's still there.
It's played on New Year's Day. What do you guys think about James Madison and Jacksonville State? The NCAA ruled this week they are not eligible for bowl play this year.
It's a shame. It's the NCAA.
Don't get Derek started on the NCAA.
They're interjecting on something that doesn't make any sense. These teams played schedules all year. They made the jump. So what's the hesitation?
What's about the student athletes?
Is it?
That's what it is. It's about the student athletes. That's what I keep being told.
Yeah.
You know, never mind that James Madison's sitting there at 10-1. You know, Jacksonville State's what, 8-3, and they're in their first year. I mean, it's so stupid. The whole thing is dumb. I don't know what the NCAA. It's like they throw their weight around because they know they can against certain things and certain teams or whatever. It's like they do it on purpose. I think it's ridiculous. I don't even think it should be a rule. I mean, I don't understand. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. But James Madison should absolutely be in a bowl game.
I mean, to think about beating teams on your schedule that have worse records that will go to bowl games. Well, and then you're sitting.
They may not end up with enough teams for the bowl. So why are they making this ruling now?
That's what I said. You're talking about. We were just talking about enough. Like, there might be somebody that gets into a bowl game at 5-7 because they have one of those good APR scores.
I hate that.
Which is, I mean, that's fine to reward a program that does have, like, graduate players, things like that. That's great. You should, because that's part of what this is supposed to be. But at the same time, if you're going to put a 5-7 team in, why would you keep a 10-2 team out? That's dumb as can be.
All right, let's get into it. The Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week, 304-305-2TDC, 304-305-2832. The question this week, who was WVU's first Big 12 opponent? Who was WVU's first Big 12 opponent? Again, the phone number, text the answer, 304-305-2TDC for a $25 gift card to Alumni Hall. I see you guys sitting here giving each other sign language. Do you know ASL, American Sign Language? He's nodding his head. He's not even speaking now. All right. First of all, we started talking about bowl games, playoffs, Florida State yesterday. Their quarterback, Travis Jordan, goes down. He's probably, it appears, I haven't seen anything.
It had to be a broken leg. It was disgusting. Don't watch it.
I haven't seen it. I just saw some of the fallout, and I was watching some ACC programming this morning while I was working.
Feel awful for the kid.
You know, what moving forward, what does this mean for them as far as, you know, they still got to play in the ACC championship? And they are potentially, they have an opportunity to end up in the college football playoffs.
They go to the Swamp on Saturday, and that's a rivalry game. You know, you don't know what, Florida's going to have some talent. You know Florida has some talent. Florida just lost a tough game last night to Missouri. But you know Florida will be up for this game. You wonder how well the backup quarterback for Florida State's going to perform in what could possibly be like a hostile environment. Is probably his first. I mean, he might have started some other games, but it's not going to be the pressure of this situation. You wonder how he's going to respond to it. And then you move forward, and if you win that one, you go on and you play Louisville in a championship game, and Louisville's probably going to be better than Florida. I don't know what it means. You can argue that if Florida State wins out, they may leave them out of the playoff at 13-0 because of this. Like that's where I would have an issue.
That would be ridiculous.
That's where I would have an issue as well.
I mean, to penalize a team when a player gets injured, even if you're factoring in the eye test, I think the committee would consider that, but I don't think they should.
But I'm 100% in agreement. I'm just telling you what I think they might do. You can already try to see them. You can see what they're doing. They're trying to. They're trying like hell to get Alabama and Georgia in this playoff together if Alabama were to win.
I can believe it. They politically jockey on that committee.
And it's about money. I mean,
Condoleezza Rice still on that committee?
I have no idea.
Because I know she's an avid football fan and watches every Saturday.
If you listen to the college basketball, which like we shouldn't expect them to see a four-team tournament, right, in football. They can't do a 68-team tournament in basketball. But you've heard them in basketball before punish a team for an injury.
Mm-hmm.
I could see this happening to Florida State. Yeah. I mean, I could. I'm not saying they're going to. I could just logically see it because the NCAA, well, the committee isn't worried about hurting feelings or anything like that. What they're worried about is making money.
100%. They got to get Notre Dame.
They're definitely not worried about hurting ACC feelings.
Well, that's the thing. They don't care. And this would, I mean, it would not surprise me to see Florida State left out at 13-0 with the injured quarterback.
That would be a disgrace.
I agree completely.
Well, coaches, it's been they've been drug out back and blindfolded and shot in the back of the head.
It's just getting started.
Let's look at the list here. Of course, you know, obviously the coach at Mississippi State, Zach Arnett, was let go, but wasn't he Leach's guy?
He was, but I mean, he was in his first year, and you give him 11 games or 10 games or whatever. I mean, come on.
Maybe it's just one of those things where it was like, Leach dies.
He's in over his head. You can see he's first time head coach, young guy, 37, 38 years old. He's in over his head. But the thing with it for me is like, what do you expect? We talk about expectations. Like if West Virginia had a coach out here going, now he's going to be 8-4 this year. Let me go ahead and say that. But if he was going 8-4 every year and West Virginia fired him, you say, well, wait a minute. What are they doing? What's your expectations? Like, what's Mississippi State's expectations? Do you expect to compete against Georgia, Alabama, Florida, LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M, and then Oklahoma and Texas coming in? Or do you expect to just be, hey, you know, we'll be lucky to make a bowl game, and we should be satisfied with that.
I think a lot of it, as it pertains to a coach bringing in expectations, has to do with who you're grooming. There's a rumor that Chadwell at Liberty might take that job. He actually tweeted something from Starkville the other day. I think he forgot about like the location feature on Twitter, and it said Starkville, Mississippi.
He did. They circled it on Twitter. Of course, like I said, don't put anything on there, man.
I got beat. I got drug a few weeks ago on Twitter. I don't even like to tweet stuff anymore. It'll make you a little gun shy.
What did that one guy say? So unprofessional.
Yeah, I'm unprofessional. Of course, the coach at Boise State, was fired. His name's Andy Avalos.
I think he was only in like his second or third year.
They have expectations at Boise State.
I mean, I don't disagree. Like, they know. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I can see that one because Boise's used to going, you know, they're used to going 11-1. That's a you know, you gotta do the right thing there and make the move. I mean, I get it there.
Dino Babers, Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, Dino Babers at Syracuse.
Mel Tucker.
Was Mel Tucker?
Mel Tucker's gone.
I missed that one this week.
No, it wasn't this week. He was gone.
Oh, that's right. The Michigan State coach.
Yeah, Michigan State.
That was for something different. That was not a performance firing.
He sucked too.
It could have been a performance firing depending on
how you look at it. So that gets us to Jimbo, which we talked about last week. You know, 76. Did you see the way the money's laid out for him too?
He gets like $7.1 million for like 7 or 8 years.
Well, no, he gets like 20 or 30 of it up front.
I thought he got 19 like in the first 20 days,
right? And then 60 like six days,
he gets
more.
Like $8 million, and then he gets like $7 million for like 8 years or something stupid like at 7 years.
You know what kind of island I would be just sitting on?
Man, I tell you, you know, when
Island boy.
When you grow up, you're like, oh, I want to grow up. I want to be Superman. I want to be Spider-Man. I mean, when I was a kid, I wish I'd have looked back and grew up. I want to be a failure of a college football coach. That's what I want to be.
I want to be a fired football coach. And, of course, that brings us, you know, to Neil Brown and his future at West Virginia. If they go to Baylor this week and win, that'll leave them at 8-4. You know, and honestly, my opinion on it is, so the question becomes, do they grade him on the 5 years of work, or do they grade him on one season? And unfortunately, from my perspective, they're going to grade him on one season, and they're going to let him slide on 8-4 with beating a 500 Texas Tech team, getting blown out by two top 25 teams, not even competitive in those games, for the record, and you blew a game to a bottom feeder. You should be 9-3 minimum. I'll give you Oklahoma State.
the thing with me and where I stand.
Being negative.
No, I'm not being negative. If you beat Houston and go 9-3, absolutely. He should 100% be back at 9-3 because you've beaten everyone you should beat on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And you could say, who was the Oklahoma State? Like, I'll live with that one. Mike Gundy's a pretty good coach. Oklahoma State's been a very good program under Gundy. I can live with the three losses because you beat the nine teams that you should beat. However, when you take a step back and you say, well, they're 8-4, and this is assuming they beat Baylor. If they don't beat Baylor, then I don't even think we have this conversation. I think he's gone. But if you 8-4, and like I said, my expectations of WU football is 8-4. Like, that's a good season most years. And I say most years because you've played Houston, BYU, Central Florida, who's the other? Cincinnati. You've played four teams that were in the group of five last year, and Duquesne. That's horrible. Pitt was horrible this year. Pitt's 4-7 right now, 3-7, something like a 3-8, whatever Pitt is. Pitt was horrible this year.
Played in front of 14 people.
You still have beat. Where is the signature win? Kansas. Kansas has beat Oklahoma under Leipold. They're in year three. You look around at the landscape of these coaches and you say, okay, you know, the new coaches here have won this game. The new coaches here have won this game. Where is the signature win for Neil Brown at WVU?
Army.
That's the signature win. Cool. Would you rather beat Army or Oklahoma?
Oklahoma.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, I guess the Oklahoma win last year, but man, you talk about a team that had just quit.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
I mean, they were 6-6.
It's interesting, like, because in the post-game press conference, he did try to explain why it mattered. He said, I think it's the first team to get to 6 conference wins. But this is a weird year where win total doesn't tell the entire story.
I'm not buying that. You didn't play Texas, K-State, Kansas.
Yeah. That's the thing. You replace, I said it last week, Kansas, Kansas State, Iowa State, and Texas. You replace them with Cincinnati, Houston, Central Florida, and BYU. That's horrible.
I put no value in those wins. Yesterday, it was nice to see the team dominate, but right. It's the same old
that
song
should have
and
been
dance
the opening
every
game
every time.
On a realistic Big 12 schedule, Cincinnati and Morgantown should have been the opening game of the season.
Right. These are not. I mean, and again, it's great to win football games, and I'm happy that they're 7-4. They've met expectations. They've exceeded expectations. Nobody expected them to even win 5 or 6 games, and it's great in that sense. But the thing is the expectations are so low because you saw the previous 4 years' body of work. You know why they were picked dead last in the Big 12?
Because of the last 4 years.
Exactly.
Well, here's my thing. I'm going to hold my judgment, and back to my earlier conversation
depending
about bowl
on the bowl game.
They're going to play an SEC team probably in the bowl game. And even if they don't, they're going to play a Big Ten team. And the results of the bowl game would matter to me. That's where I would have to sit down and have my conversation.
Now, I'm going to say this too, because I'm getting ahead of myself here about what we're going to talk about. Baylor has quit. Baylor got beat last night 42-17 by TCU. Baylor has 3 wins this year. They've beat LIU Brooklyn. They've beat Cincinnati 32-29, and they beat Central Florida 36-35 in a game in which they trailed 35-7. If you don't beat Baylor and you finish 7-5, there's no question what should be done. That's the key. This game's got a ton of pressure for WU. Like, they're going to win, I think, in my opinion. But it's a huge game for Neil Brown.
I agree. Let's go around some quick scores around the Big 12. Texas over Iowa State, 26-16. Rocco Becht, 24-32, 2 touchdowns and a pick. They lost that one at home. But here's my thing about Rocco, because I've said in groups, man, I would love to see him in Morgantown, and I get that, well, he's not that good. I'm like, he's not even supposed to be playing. If you remember, he's a redshirt freshman that was supposed to be learning, and he's putting up these type of numbers, and they're winning ball games.
You know, last year, Iowa State had a subpar year for what they are with Matt Campbell, and I'm going to say this about them this year. They've gotten better as the season's gone on. If he stays at Iowa State, it'll be interesting to see how they do, because if Beck continues to get better the way he's gotten better as the season's gone on, they might be a pretty good team. I mean, they're never going to be a dominant force, but they may be one of those teams, you know, that's 8-4.
In this league?
And in this league, they'll pick somebody off at home because that is a hard place to play.
Oklahoma over BYU, a team that was dead in the woods, and then they play Oklahoma to a 31-24 score.
I watched this game.
Hard to believe.
I'm sitting here watching it, and it's unfolding. It's 24-24. BYU runs the ball all the way down to the 2-yard line. Runs it. They pass on first down and throw a 100-yard interception return for a touchdown and lose. Now, I mean, you know, we talk about coaching and everything. It's first and goal, and you're a 24-point underdog. I understand you want to win the game, like you're going for it and everything. But the thing is you had just ran the ball. Run it again. Like, what's the hurt on first down from the two to run the football? Instead, you lose the game that way. And if you're betting ice cream cones on it, then I lost 380 of them on Oklahoma.
K-State over Kansas, 31-27. Sent you a text this week. Jalen Daniels says he's coming back to Kansas next year.
Wow.
A little early in the game for that.
Is he lying? If he's not lying, that could be a very, very, very dangerous team next year in the Big 12. Kansas will be very good. They return a ton of parts. And if Daniels is healthy and plays, Kansas will be very good next year. That'll be an interesting team to watch if he stays there. I hope he does, because I want to see Kansas do well.
Yeah, that's good to hear. There was some speculation he might transfer to USC. I remember you said that earlier.
The Twitterverse.
There was a lot of things saying that. There were a lot of people saying that.
Here's a game that I thought was just seeing the stat. I didn't get to watch it because I was traveling yesterday. Jacksonville State over La Tech, 56-17. Jacksonville State ran for 522 yards. The most ever in conference history.
We've seen that before, though.
I've
seen that happen before in a Big East game, but I can't remember who that coach was. Obviously, I didn't watch any of this game. I don't even know if it was on TV or not.
ESPN
but, you know,
Plus, 2 o'clock.
He's a 8-3 for Jacksonville State, and a resounding win. I mean, you're winning games 56-17. I don't care who you're beating necessarily, because in this situation, they're moving up from from the FCS, it's called. They're moving up to the FBS. This is their first year, and a 56-17 win over any FBS team is probably pretty good in year one.
Not to mention, just 2 years ago, that program was in shambles.
They were awful a couple years back, but they beat Florida State 1 year, too.
Yeah, yeah. So West Virginia heads to where is Baylor? It's in Waco. I was going to say Lubbock. I was like, which crazy town in Texas is this in? I was thinking David Koresh or Buddy Holly. So it's David Koresh land, heading down to Waco. You mentioned it earlier. Baylor's pretty much gave up. They're not a very good football team. Beat them last year on a Thursday night in Morgantown, which was considered an upset at the time. And I started thinking about it. I was like, man, was that the puncture wound in their?
It sure feels like it.
Because they literally spiraled after that. And, man, they've not performed well this year.
Yeah, this should be another W for West Virginia. I want to see intensity on the road. Against Oklahoma, that was the most disappointing thing, is you just didn't come to play. Can the offensive line replicate this against the Bears?
I've complained and complained and complained about the lack of road wins for Neil Brown. This is one that is a must, in my opinion, just for the simple fact of how bad Baylor has played lately. I mean, they got trounced last night, 42-17 by TCU. Anybody they've played that's been any good at all has trounced them. I think they lost to Texas State in week one. I don't know what's going on with them. It's like, I don't know. It would not surprise me to see them make a move either with their head coach. I would not be surprised to see him fired next Sunday, if not before. West Virginia's got to win this game. I think they will. I think they'll win it handily. It should be a resounding victory for WVU.
And West Virginia moves to 8-4. I think the Mountaineers go to Texas, down to Waco, and knock off the Bears. It's hunting season, folks. West Virginia will end up 8-4, and then we just got to sit back and wait, see what bowl they end up.
Got to wait a week till the next Sunday for the bowl pairings.
Kick back, watch some hoops, and.
Do they do that after the?
They do it after the conference championships. Weekend? Yeah, that'll be the next Sunday. It'll be the next Sunday.
So okay, yeah, because bowl season's around the corner. Yeah, I'll just be curious to see where West Virginia goes. Will they end up in Orlando? Will they end up in Texas? Will they end up in Memphis? God forbid they end up in Arizona.
That would be terrible. I mean, bowl. You got to think there's very few teams they could take ahead. I mean, Oklahoma, Texas, and Oklahoma State.
Take one of those Western teams. Take Texas Tech.
Yeah, take a 6-6 team for that game. I think it'll be a 6-6 team for that game.
Okay. What are you guys doing this week? Thanksgiving week. What's up with you guys? What are you guys doing?
This week, got to do a couple things for the show leading up to Thanksgiving. When we get there, just going to lounge, going to lay around. I'm not like a helping cook dinner guy. I'm just a eater, so I'll watch football. And the Detroit Lions are actually good this year, so that'll make the day a little more interesting.
I mean, I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to watch sports. That's what I always do. I watch basketball this week because there's usually good college basketball. I'll watch football all week. I'm not cooking anything, so everybody knows that. I'm not cooking either.
Lou will hook it up.
Lou will cook some stuff up. She'll cook some good stuff up.
Yeah.
So
the boys are – so I got my nephews coming in town Wednesday, my sister, and my daughter will be over. So we're going to hang out at Mom's. I have no idea what she's fixing for dinner.
Probably won't get anything.
Whatever it is, you know, here's my thing. Here's my take on turkey. So Hussin. I'm good for it.
Hussins.
Yeah, which, whatever.
Hey, that's great.
I'm all for turkey. I don't mind turkey and ham and all that stuff for Thanksgiving. I don't want it repeated at Christmas.
See, I'm in the corner at Thanksgiving. Like, I like turkey and ham, but I only get it once a year, so it's a Thanksgiving. So I'm fine with that. But at the same time, if somebody wants different stuff at Thanksgiving, I'm completely okay with that, too. Like, I wouldn't care if it was hot dogs and hamburgers. Like, I don't care. I don't care.
I'm skipping that one.
Well, I'm going to eat whatever anybody cooks, like, because I'm not going to cook it. If I'm not cooking it, it's going to taste good. I don't care. It's not mine. I don't care.
I'm a so at Christmas, I prefer, like, a prime rib or some steaks, some ribeyes or something, just something thrown on the grill. Because, you know, turkey, it's like, God, we just had this a month ago.
Yep.
You guys, if you guys care at all, so my nephew visited Texas yesterday.
Hook him.
My sister claims, so his birthday is, when is his birthday? Well, every year at Thanksgiving, when they come in, we do the birthday cake thing.
So it's around coming this up. Time, yeah.
So she says that he's going to make a decision soon, before his birthday.
I thought he was committed to Maryland.
No, he decommitted.
Oh, he decommitted from Maryland.
Yeah,
oh,
when their coach is at Bama.
Oh, that's right. He went to Alabama and decommitted with the coach.
So he's visited West Virginia, Alabama, A&M, and Texas.
I think he should take a little more time. He's still young. Just my opinion. Just my two cents.
There's this weird thing in baseball, and I didn't think it was true. Last year, I didn't think it was. I was like, it's still too early. But when you look at those lists, like I sent you the top
30
kids in the country, and then – all of them, except for like two guys, are committed. In baseball, they commit early for some reason.
I mean, like, has he visited Southern Cal yet?
He's not going out there. My sister says he's not even wasting his time to go visit.
Wasting his time? What is wrong with – I need to speak with her immediately. Yeah. Immediately.
So I'll be curious because he doesn't tip his hat too much.
I mean, you know, there's obviously Texas is
– So I did see the videos from down there.
Texas, LSU, those are – big time programs for baseball.
The baseball facility at Texas, my sister said, it was...
Oh, I'm sure it's top notch.
So the one I was not impressed with, and I didn't get a video from A&M, but the one I was not impressed with, Alabama's facilities.
Well, they put all their money into football.
Well, that's the thing. They have a sports complex. So they work out at the football facility.
Yeah, and that football facility is pretty awesome.
It
wasn't that good?
Yeah.
Ah, come on now. It's got
to
be.
Well, it was nice, but it wasn't anything nicer than what West Virginia has. But the thing about it is, West Virginia's baseball team has their own facility.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything they do is out of their own building. Yeah. So I thought West Virginia had them beat on that, but Texas, it was a little different.
Texas and LSU. LSU, in my opinion, is the best program in college baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't know the great historical stuff. Those Pac-12 teams are generally good too. Stanford, California, UCLA, USC, those teams are generally good too. But LSU is the best one in my opinion.
I can't speak for him. For those of you listening, his name's Miles Upchurch, one of the top right-handed pitchers in the class of 25. He's the son of David Upchurch, played defensive line in West Virginia. And my sister, you know, we're all tied in up there in some form or fashion. Anyway, the thing about it is, I don't see him. First of all, I don't see him going to California for school. Just his personality keeps him closer to home.
USC would get a visit.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm just going by his personality.
Yeah.
I think West Virginia has a shot, but you know, A&M and Texas, man, those are different types.
It's hard to compete. Atmospheres. Like, it's hard to compete with those schools in baseball, especially for, like, West Virginia is more northern.
Yeah.
Those southern schools for baseball are really, really hard to compete with.
And not to mention the coach that he committed to at Maryland is at Alabama.
My guess is he'll be member of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Yeah. Just a hunch. Just my hunch. I don't know. I don't I've only met him once.
I mean, you can't go wrong in the SEC, Big 12. You're playing against guys that are going to the majors. Everybody that puts in significant innings gets drafted somewhere. You got a zillion rounds in the Major League Baseball draft, so it's not quite the same as other sports. But, I mean, Texas, you mentioned, that's been a powerhouse for years.
If Take out these schools. Yeah. I'm selfishly wanting him to go back to the – I'd prefer him for him to be in the ACC because I can't go watch him very much in the SEC.
Yeah, that's tough.
So, who knows? I'll get off my personal soapbox there. But it is a little interest to the listeners just due to his relationship with WVU. He's visited, and he's heavily considering it. I mean, I do know this. He did enjoy his visit to Morgantown. Now, what it comes – I don't know anything about what they've offered him as far as NIL. I know, the only thing I do know – is Central – he hasn't even visited Central Florida. And they offered him a significant amount of money to come to Central Florida.
That's illegal.
Well, the trust.
I'm kidding.
The trust offered him.
I don't care.
However they
do it.
But so I was thinking, wow, if they offered him and he hasn't even been there yet.
If he rolls into Thanksgiving with a new Charger, you'll know where he's going.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see that. All right, thank you guys very much for listening this week. We have one more week left, so we'll be back next week after the Baylor game. We'll take a little break, and we'll come back with something for the bowl on the football side. But don't forget, Full Court Press is underway. Week 3 is this week. Coach Bob Huggins will be joining us, and, of course, we're going to be talking about Jacksonville State. Yeah. I get so confused with that stuff, but the holidays are here. But thanks for checking out the show this week. Don't forget, hit like, subscribe, reviews, all that fun stuff. You can catch everything at touchdowncity.com.
visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.